At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Hey, 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 we're back here on the WOW. It is Aggo here with Woody on Monday, the 8th of July. What's up, Woody?
What's up, buddy? Hey, let me ask you a question before we get started. First of all, I hope you had a great weekend and all the good shit. You ever watch anything to do with the UFC, the Ultimate Fighter Championship?
My boys are all over it. Occasionally they will like come to me and say, Dad, you got to watch this. This happened in the fight last night, and show me a video online or something.
Right.
But I don't, I don't watch
they've had a show, which I think is genius. And I used to watch it. It's been on for 20 years where they take these unknown,
Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah. Right. Unknown fighters. And, they bring them into the house and they have champion coaches, right? And they have two different teams and they get to pick who they fight, whatever the fuck, right? And then at the end of it, whoever the winners in the house go to Vegas and they get, you know, the winner gets the Ultimate Fighter contract and all this big shit. So I've been watching this forever. First of all, I'm so glad they didn't have that shit when I was a kid coming up, because I would have done it, right? And I probably had the big cauliflower ears bigger than these headphones. But the reason I'm telling you about it, huge lifers, Ron and Kathy Loader, L-O-D-E-R, from California. And Ron was with me. He was the only one not from the state of Wisconsin that was with us on the hog hunt when I caught brucellosis. But they also have helped over the years with the Crew Bashes and the LOPA, Louisiana Procurement Agency fundraiser. They're kind of retired, and both of them have vast experience in that field. But check this out. Their son, Ryan, made it into the house. And so the season, I think that 5 episodes have been released so far this season. And tomorrow night, Tuesday night on ESPN Plus, Ryan is fighting for the first time in the house. Now, he's a monstrous kid, just like his daddy, Ron, is, you know, probably a little bit older than me, and he's got guns like you would believe. You know, he works out all the time. Very successful man, but Ryan is I remember when Ron walked off before the hog hunt, was talking to Ryan before they went in the house, what have you. But I'm pulling for Ryan Loader, y'all. If he's the only fight that's going to be on tomorrow night in the house, and they do all this stuff, and evidently, yeah, they get in some pretty heated arguments and blah, 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 and then they have the fight. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. If y'all get a chance to watch it, I'm going to share a picture of Ryan. And Ryan, you know, you got our support, bro. Good luck.
So, and it's live on ESPN when they do the fight. It's live.
Well, it's actually been recorded, so they can release it from the house. They have all the ongoings in the house and the training that lead up to the fight and the weigh-ins. And then the fights are fucking the one last week. Holy shit. This one dude, there's no way this guy should have been standing, and he kept coming back. It's craziness. And these guys are like master athletes. They jiu-jitsu and karate and wrestling and boxing and all this shit combined into one package. But Anyway, enough.
And they
about
just
that.
They don't feel pain. I mean, it's crazy. You watch these matches and how hard they get hit, and they just don't react to pain.
And what I like about it is, it doesn't matter who you are, how much of the favorite you are. I think this season has more international fighters than a house than any of the previous seasons. And there's been 20 seasons, and 15 UFC champions have come out of the house from prior seasons. Yeah. And a lot of them had great careers, but this one has them from all over the world. Russia.
Oh, this is the first time it's international.
Well, they've had some internationals, but there's more international than there are Americans in the house. So anyway, good luck, Ryan. So, Ryan Loader, y'all.
Tuesday, ESPN, Ryan Loader on Ultimate Fighter.
Yep, on Ultimate Fighter, UFC, the house show. Anyway, I'll post a link to it. Not a link, I'll post this picture.
We will check it out.
And thank you, Ron and Kathy, for being great parents and lifers. So, all right.
Well, Woody, there's a young lady who has owned the internet, as they say, over the last couple of weeks. And in your second segment of Woody Does Gossip, you're going to tell us about Hawktua Girl.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about her. And you said young lady, and you used the term lady very loosely. Okay. So, but unless you've been living on a submarine, yeah, right, at the bottom of the ocean over the past week and a half, you know who the Hawktua Girl is, and her name is Haley Welch, and she seems to be just a cute party girl who loves the Nashville scene, right? But the Hawktua Girl has become a phenomenon after being featured in a Man on the Street interview from the creators Tim and DTV. Now, in the video, she's asked, "What's the one move in bed that makes a man go crazy every time?" And her response has made her famous. She said, "You got to give him that Hawktua and spit on that thing," she exclaimed. She's a good sport with a lot of charisma, which is like half the job of being famous. We were all angered when a social post went viral claiming that Welch was a preschool teacher who had been fired as a result of the video. That story was fake and just added to the entry, right? Hawktua's 15 minutes has extended well beyond the norm. And on Friday night, Logan Paul, the YouTube star turned WWE star. Yeah, I think he's slated to fight Mike Tyson in the future. Anyway, he added a new move to his repertoire in a match with LA Knight and Santos Escobar on WWE SmackDown. After Paul failed to pin Escobar, he pulled his head back and spat out the phrase for his finishing move, right? Hawktua.
created a Hawktua move. That's right. Great.
Yeah. On Saturday night, country music star Zach Bryan had a concert in Nashville, and he brought the Hawktua Girl on stage to sing and dance, and then she yelled Hawktua into the mic to a rousing applause. And she was also video hanging out with Shaq and with the Barstool Sports guys, right? Now, the talent management firm Penthouse has come forward as Haley's new rep, and this is according to TMZ. Founder Johnny Forster made it clear the company is excited to be working with Haley, though she stayed tight-lipped about HW's first project. And as Johnny put it, Haley Starr is on the rise, so much so she could be America's next sweetheart. I doubt it. Although since Haley rose to fame with an X-rated viral quote, we're not sure everyone would agree with Johnny's sentiment. And she finally broke her silence on Plain Bree podcast last week, telling host Bree LaPaglia, she didn't want to be known as just the Hawktua Girl. Yeah, she deserves an official Woody Does Gossip Hawktua. So, Ago, are you ready? Hawktua.
Absolutely. Hawktua.
That's so fucking... Yeah.
Okay, so
parent people like my parents are looking at them and like, what the fuck? I don't know.
No, look, I for whatever reason, I saw this literally within minutes after it got posted. I don't know what the hell that says about me that it got into my feed that quickly after it happened. But this is a really cute girl, and she's really funny. She's got a great sort of way about her. And this is like a man on the street interview, and she's just naturally funny with the way that she responds to things, which I think is a really important part of this. Because if some, you know, real slutty looking girl who didn't have a sense of humor said something like this in an interview, I don't think it would have captured the attention of people the way that this has. And I mean, everybody's involved creating their own memes here and trying to create like cottage industries off of this. So I saw a guy who had done a number of different Haktua business extensions. So one was, you know, when you go to the bathroom and you've got the soap dispenser that's on the wall that, you know, you just put your hands under it and let soap go. This one had her profile on it, and the soap comes out of the mouth of the profile, and it says Haktua each time and spits out a little bit of soap for you. I've seen someone out there with Haktua lube. I've seen, what's the other one that I saw? Oh, a mouth rinse. So everybody's on. I don't know how this woman's going to protect her IP, because I don't think she can copyright the phrase. But, you know, I have never been Haktua'd. I actually got into this discussion with AJ Benza the other day. I think this is a more recent happening in the world where, and I don't know if it's comes out of porn, soft porn, whatever, but this is the, I guess, poor woman's lube is the Haktua spit. And so that's the origin of this. But despite that, that's where it comes from, it's sort of being embraced universally, and she's kind of becoming, you know, an it girl. But I wouldn't be surprised now that it's gone as broad as it's gone if this girl didn't become really famous, because she handles every situation with that same sense of humor and that accent. And like I said, she's really cute. It's there's a life there for a Haktua girl. So I think you picked a good topic for your second gossip segment.
Two older daughters, mid-20s. I would not want either one of them to become famous or Haktua. That would grow, no matter how great their personalities are.
Well, I would have to agree with you with that, except there might be a situation where you know that that was your daughter just clowning around, and that's not coming from her actual experiences, her screwing around on an interview. I don't know. Anyway, good luck to Haley Welch, Haktua girl.
Haktua.
Hey, y'all. Let me tell you about Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish that goal. Mochi's program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States, and you will be meeting with their team online. You deserve doctors that listen. Mochi is dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being with the goal of transforming how weight management is approached. Mochi Health takes a holistic approach to weight loss that includes visit with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultations, and medications delivered to your door. Science-backed medications, including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compound versions, affordable and accessible, regardless of insurance coverage. With Mochi, their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle. Reach your weight loss goals with science-backed, FDA-approved GLP-1 medications and support from real doctors and guidance from registered dietitians, and help with making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. Y'all have seen this. My wife has done it. My brother-in-law has done it. One of my best friends is doing it. And it really is an amazing process that works. So get started at joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off and let Mochi help change your life. Hey, y'all, you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. It adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend.
This is an interesting story out of Florida, where apparently no attorney will satisfy this Florida woman who's now let, I think it's 8 different attorneys go after she's accused of letting her boyfriend die while he was trapped in a suitcase.
Nice.
Sarah Boone is this woman's name. She's 46. She's now gone through 8 attorneys, many of whom found her too difficult to work with. So she's firing some. Some of them are just throwing in the white flag on their own. Orange County Circuit Judge Michael S. Kranick has decided that she will not have a 9th and has ordered Boone to represent herself at trial. Never heard of anything like this. Right. Work your way through 8, and the judge says, that's it, enough, you're going to represent yourself. He said, it has become apparent to the court that the defendant will not permit herself to be represented by anyone. Boone is charged with second-degree murder in the death of her boyfriend, 42-year-old Jose Torres Jr. This is during a night of drinking back in February of 2020. Boone allegedly convinced Torres to curl up inside a suitcase, and after she zipped the suitcase up, she began mocking him, accusing him of cheating on her and choking her. And this is according to the police. She allegedly refused to let him out despite him begging to come out of the suitcase. And she found him dead in that suitcase the next morning.
Nice.
So she hired this Mauricio Padilla to replace the initial court appointed attorney to represent her. And that's just months after the initial arrest. But he flew the coop in 2022 because of, quote, irreconcilable differences, and described their relationship as adversarial. Ever since, it's been a revolving door of attorneys. Kranich said the cycling through lawyers may be a delay tactic.
Thanks.
Sounds like a delay tactic,
right,
to me.
Right.
But actions speak louder than words, according to Kranich, although the defendant's words seemingly reveal a desire to go to trial. However, as set forth herein, her actions and inability to work with court-appointed counsel are repeated over and over again, allowing the defendant to her eighth court-appointed attorney, her ninth attorney overall, will only serve to delay the case further and encourage the defendant to persist in efforts to prevent the resolution of this case on its merits. She blasted her latest attorney, somebody named Patricia Cashman, during a hearing last month. She said, I feel she is untruthful with me and full-blown prejudiced against me, which I believe adds to her nasty attitude toward me, and I do not trust her, she said of this attorney, Patricia Cashman. Everyone constantly blames me that I am the reason why I am supposedly going on attorney number 8, which I am not the reason for any of them. She also said, I have told her from day one that her snotty attitude was inappropriate, and I tried very hard to bear with her and her attitude. So here's this woman who kills the boyfriend, his boyfriend, not husband, right? Putting him in a suitcase. Why the idiot ever got in the suitcase? Who the hell knows? And now she's worked her way through 8 attorneys, just kicking the can down the road on getting into court. So, she said a bunch of bad shit about some other attorneys. She complained in a letter she wrote to the judge on June 25th that she was upset that she wasn't informed that this Cashman attorney had requested to be removed as her attorney until someone at the Orange County Jail informed her. She complained that case documents may have been lost between all her attorneys. She said, pardon me for having to utilize your invaluable time to ask to receive my invaluable case item, she wrote. Please understand, I'm trying to understand how and when I can fully, rightfully defend myself. Due process is overdue. Kranich granted Cashman, that's the attorney's, request to remove herself as Boone's attorney. The judge ordered Cashman to send all the discovery in the case to Boone at the jail. The trial is now scheduled to start on October 7th, and Kranich is not budging on that date. The trial will not be continued for any reason except for extraordinary good cause, and such extraordinary good cause shall not include retention of counsel by the defendant. So she's not delaying it a day for her to accommodate a new attorney. She's either defending herself or getting a new attorney immediately, but the trial is going on October 7th regardless.
I'm still blown away by how you get a motherfucker to get in a suitcase voluntarily. I don't know. Maybe she beats the rap and she gets the suitcase deal.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. Yeah. You know what? They'll still have some attorney that's appointed to sit in the courtroom. Even though this girl's going to end up representing herself, they'll have somebody there to help her for procedural shit. I've seen that before where people want to represent themselves and the judge will appoint an attorney, even though they're not officially representing them, to help them try to follow the rule of the law.
Right. Because they can't, and all that stuff. They can't represent themselves unless they are a lawyer, right? I mean, you can't represent yourself.
No, you can represent yourself. Absolutely. You can. That's your right. Like they say, lawyer that represents himself or whatever has a fool for a client, as an old saying, but you certainly can represent yourself. Absolutely you can. They explain it to you, and if you're still adamant at the end of it that you want to represent yourself and you fuck it up, then it's on you. So you can't win
and
an
you
appeal.
Can't, you can't win an appeal. You can't make it. You can't win an appeal on whatever you call it, ineffectiveness of counsel claim. If you were your own counsel. Okay. Right. Got it.
All right. So I want to talk to y'all about a new sponsor of all the RRC network shows. The name of the company is Hero Packages, and they do exactly what you think they do. It's Hero Care Packages, and they do exactly what you think they do. They create care packages that family and friends can send to their loved ones in the military. Now, I know many of you lifers have sons, daughters, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews, and friends currently serving. This is a great way to let them know how much you care. And Hero Care Packages was founded by a military veteran, Jack Ray, who said, when he pulled into a Navy port, you know, and after they'd been out at sea for months, and, you know, sailors would wait hours in line just to see if they got any mail. And he said, as an officer, he was always heartbroken when he saw sailors who didn't receive any packages. So Jack created Hero Care Packages to fix all that.
Hero Care Packages created a fully customized model where you can choose specific items and combine them into a highly personalized package, or you can choose from a large selection of pre-curated packages. The team at Hero Care Packages handles everything else. All you do is log into herocarepackages.com and either select a package from their menu or customize one yourself. You can even purchase a gift card and let your hero shop for themselves if you prefer. All you've got to do is go to herocarepackages.com and make your selection. Use promo code RLRC at checkout and get 10% off your entire purchase. Join us in spreading the positivity and gratitude that our heroes deserve. Shop now and let them know that they are appreciated. That's herocarepackages.com and promo code RLRC for 10% off. So last week, we told you we were going to create a new segment honoring Pinellas County because we've just done so many stories out of Pinellas County over the last couple of years. And so Woody's got a new segment called What's New in Pinellas County. So Woody, what's new in Pinellas County?
Well, we come to love Pinellas County so much that we decided to make a weekly feature out of it called What's New in Pinellas County. And here goes our first segment. Now, someone's always screwing around with the poor retirees, and we're about to do it again. Pinellas County sheriffs are dealing with a brazen scammer. The scammer makes calls and identifies himself as a Pinellas County sheriff's lieutenant. The suspect is calling citizens and identifies himself as Lieutenant James Perry. And after he identifies himself, obviously a fake officer, the suspect informs the citizens they have outstanding warrants due to missing a court date. The citizen is then given an opportunity to pay their fines to the as a yet untraceable app. The suspect blocks his phone number during the process. And to date, more than 10 citizens have been successfully targeted in this scam. Now, the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office say, please note, we will never call citizens requesting money over the telephone and will never ask for banking information to wire money. We advise citizens not to give personal information or account information over the phone and call the sheriff's office to report suspicious activity. If anyone has information on a scam or has become a victim, they're asked to call Pinellas County Sheriff's Office at 727-582-6200.
You see how intimidated and how easy it is for the elderly to be intimidated by all of this new technology. And I mean, it's just, it's got to be easy to pull off these scams on these folks. I catch my mother whenever I'm with her, just she picks up every call because for her entire life, she's picked up every call. And it's just instinctive. And for all of her life, you didn't get to see who it was who was calling. And so she's not used to that. Hey, don't pick up unless you recognize the name that's on it. And so they're easy prey. And it's just another example of it. I hadn't heard this one, but it makes sense. I mean, parking tickets, people often don't know what parking tickets they have or, right. You know, some stuff like that. And, you know, you fail to appear for your court date immediately. They're frightened that they might get arrested. And, you know, here's a way to prevent getting arrested. Just send the money now. I mean, I'm sure it's,
yeah. And a lot of times
I'm sure it's pretty successful.
They'll do this and they'll even say their kid's name. Oh, it's your teenage you know, or your grown son, and we can't get him, and we're going to send a SWAT team blow up his fucking house if you don't pay it or whatever. And they prey on the, like you said, the elderly being used to scams and stuff like that, which is unfortunate, but that's the way of the world.
And they got them some elderly there in Pinellas County. So hopefully they will catch this guy or guys and it'll be on to the next scam.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you listened last Monday, you heard our first segment of what we are calling Nittany Lying, which comes from the podcast I did with John Ziegler a couple of years back called With the Benefit of Hindsight about the Penn State Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno scandal, child sex abuse scandal. This week, we're talking about the second episode of that podcast series, which was called Panic. Episode 2 of With the Benefit of Hindsight is called Panic, and panic is what happened after the Attorney General Linda Kelly on that Monday, November 7th, 2011, called the press conference and read those words that the graduate assistant had seen a 10-year-old boy naked with a naked Sandusky in the shower being subjected to anal sex. And those words set off a moral panic across central Pennsylvania and really the rest of the country. And don't allege that there's a conspiracy in this case. There isn't, at least not in the traditional sense. What we allege is that a perfect storm of circumstances emerged out of this panic that united a bunch of forces of people that were in power that you wouldn't think would be aligned in this case. It's completely counterintuitive to think that the state, the prosecutors, the police would be aligned with the university that is being charged with all of these heinous crimes and a cover-up. But that's exactly what happens in this case. And episode 2, Panic, is our attempt to illustrate how all of that came to be. And we do it chronologically. There's an old saying, a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth can get its pants on. And in this case, that's exactly what happens. Is we talked in our review of episode 1 about how that line in the presentment was not true, but yet it became true. It became true for everyone in the state college area. It became true for every American watching every newscast on TV. It became true for the prosecutors that were looking for more victims. It became true for everyone involved in this case. And so what this episode does is it exposes the danger, you know, what can happen when people think they know something and therefore think they are doing the right thing. They'll do almost anything. They will cut corners. They will disregard evidence. They will bend the rules in ways they never would have bent them before because there's a panic. They believe there's a monster. They are on the side of right, and they've got to get the monster. And so let's talk about this episode. Where do you want to start, Woody?
Well, first of all, I think it was well done at, telling the story of the panic. And that's exactly what it was. It was a lot of self-preservation going on. A lot of the board of directors being scared of the fallout of the perception. I don't know how this bitch attorney general got away with this, the fake indictment. And I guess we'll get into that later on. But she did that in... Naturally, everybody hates a child molester, and then you put Penn State into the mix, and you know the winningest coach of all time, Joe Paterno, he really got fucked in this deal, and then they went in a panic, and I think Ziegler did a very good job of presenting it in chronological order all the way up to the two teams taking a knee and praying for the victims and all this shit on national TV. But gee, backing it up, that comes out. And, there's some things in there, and you like supposedly Paterno said, I guess it was in the grand jury thing. Something to the effect of, I wish I could have done more, or I wish I would have done more, or whatever. And that got taken out of context in the panic ever. Do I believe Joe Paterno knew Sandusky was raping kids? No, I don't. I mean, nobody's going to put up with that shit. Do I believe he turned a blind eye to it? No, I don't. Dude, I think hindsight might be 20/20 and open your eyes like, oh, that could be. Yeah. But, even Joe's own son put a fuck into him when they, I don't know which happened first. The university put the first fucking on him when they send him a cell phone by courier, and they tell him on that call.
That happened after. Okay. So that happened on the Wednesday. I think what you're referring to with his son, Scott, happens on Tuesday evening. He goes out on the front lawn at the Paterno house and tells everyone, the crowd of students that are gathered there and reporters, that everyone should, quote, pray for the victims.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's a fucking idiot now. And they also, and it's human nature, they're thinking Paterno's not speaking for himself. This guy's, his son, speaking for him. And he comes out and says that about the victims. And he doesn't know dick about it, right? I mean, there are no other victims, not even listed in the indictment or whatever at this point, or alleged victims at this point. But when you say that, and you got kids holding basically a candlelight vigil or whatever outside your house because their love for Paterno, and then Paterno's son, who is a lawyer, not a very good one, obviously, but it comes out and makes that statement, and he thinks that's going to calm the crowd or do whatever, for his dad. He just poured about a million gallons of gasoline on the fire. And all be during the same week when, this was going to be the ESPN's featured game, right, on national TV, Penn State, and who was in Nebraska? They were playing.
The week before, Joe Paterno had just broken the all-time NCAA wins record. So this game that's supposed to be played that Saturday is a national game on ESPN. It's the coronation of Paterno as the winningest coach in NCAA history. And so in the lead up to that kind of a celebration, in 3 days, all of this happens. The presentment is delivered. And I want to go back for a second, because when you say, I don't know how that Attorney General Linda Kelly could deliver that presentment. How could she do that? Well, we'll find out later that there's a local prosecutor, there's a local DA by the name of Janelle Eschbach, who is the one who basically wrote the presentment. Right. And we have emails between Mike McQueary and Janelle Eschbach that we expose in later episodes, where when the presentment comes out, McQueary is pissed off.
Yeah.
He's like, what the because he's perceived immediately as sort of a hero. He saw something and he did something about it. He signed up to be a hero anyway. And then this thing comes out saying he witnessed anal sex, which he never did. So he sends an email to this Janelle Eschbach telling her that he's going to call his own press conference. And at that press conference, he's going to clarify the record and tell the public that he never said anything about any kind of sexual act and never sought any kind of sexual act. She responds with, this is a loose paraphrase, I know the language in the presentment is not true, but you can't do that, because if you do that, you will do damage, irreparable damage to our case. So basically, yeah. No, please don't do that. You can't do that, because if you do that, our case blows up.
Yeah. Now, well,
we wouldn't see that. Nobody would see that until 2 years later. That wouldn't come out and be clear to the public until 2 years later, and really wouldn't get any coverage with the public 2 years later when it comes out. But I think Linda Kelly didn't know anything. I think Linda Kelly knew only what Janelle Eschbach and the local people were telling her, and what her boss, Tom Corbett, who's the governor of Pennsylvania at the time, who had been the attorney general of Pennsylvania when the charges were brought originally, when the investigation was opened, he was the attorney general who opened the case and pursued Sandusky. So this case was his baby. He's now the governor. He appoints her attorney general. She's reading from a presentment put together by the local DA, which is why she responds in that press conference. There's a savvy reporter, I don't know who the person is, that asks, hey, we're told in the presentment that the graduate assistant went to Paterno's house and told him what he saw, but do we know that the graduate assistant was explicit with Paterno that he had seen a sexual act? And she says, I can only tell you what's in the present as her answer.
Yeah.
Right? And all the presentment says is he went to Paterno's house and told him what he saw. Well,
right.
The presentment lies about what he saw. We know he didn't see anything. So what you're saying is he went to Paterno's house and told him he didn't see anything.
Right. Right. Well, let's talk about the other reporter who's a graduate of Penn State who gets the scoop, evidently, right before they read the indictment. And she ends up winning a fucking Pulitzer Prize for this story. What's her name?
It's Sarah Ganim is her name.
Yeah.
Sarah. This is an unbelievable part of the story.
I'm going to tell you, from being in law enforcement, I certainly had media contacts that if I wanted something, I wouldn't say I didn't do fake shit like this, but if I wanted the media to put pressure on the suspect or whatever, then maybe get other people to come forward or whatever. I had certain people that I would feed the story to before we'd feed it to anybody else. And of course, in turn, they would give me on certain cases, they tell me what, you know, a witness called in and said this or what have you. But this chick is a nobody, nothing. And they feed it to her.
Yeah. She's a recent graduate Cub reporter doing, you know, you're in central Pennsylvania. I mean, there's not a lot of news coming out of central Pennsylvania anyway. So you're a rookie reporter at a relatively small newspaper. Right. And you get told in March of 2011. So remember, the presentment, the indictment doesn't come down until November. So you're told 8 months ahead of time that there's an investigation into possible child sex abuse by Jerry Sandusky. And you go and you run with that and put a story in the paper the next day, the purpose of which is clear in retrospect, was to try and recruit new victims. They needed people to come forward and claim that they were abused by Sandusky. They didn't do it. This wasn't an effort to frame Sandusky or, you know, just get, they were convinced he was a monster. And so, They were desperately trying to figure out how they could get the monster. And the leak to Ganim that produced the article in March was with the hopes that putting that sort of bat signal up in the market would draw victims that had been silent for years to come forward. And in that period of time, between March and November, there are a couple of people that come forward, and those stories are fascinating when we get to them. And so, so it does accomplish what it intended to accomplish, but there's other things that go on that that make that bat signal attract people who saw opportunity because of the other things that happen. The most critical thing that happens here is that there's a that people that should be aligned, Spanier, Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky, Gary Schultz, Tim Curley, that should all be telling the same story because they all lived the same story, are not telling exactly the same story because Scott Paterno, who is a, as you said, lawyer and Republican lobbyist, is dependent on being in the good graces of the governor, who was the attorney general who brought this case. He decides the best path to survival for his dad's legacy is to separate his father from Sandusky. And Sandusky, everybody sees Sandusky as a weird dude. He is a weird dude. He grew up in this home that was like a YMCA. It was full of kids all day long. He showered in a big shower room, you know, open showers with 30 heads that, you know, he played sports all day long with kids from the area. That was how he grew up. And he was a goofball. But he really, was much more comfortable from a relationship standpoint with younger people. I don't mean 8 and 10 year olds. I mean younger people. That's why he was such a great coach. He was the reason that Penn State won that 1986 Super Bowl against a Super Bowl 1986 championship against a much better Miami team, because they intercepted Vinny Testaverde 5 times in that game because of a defensive scheme that he had put together. The defensive players loved him, and so it would be easy for some to look at him and go, well, he's such a doofus, such a goofball, such a naif. Maybe it fits the profile a little bit, but you know what happens during the course of this week in November of 2011. Is the alignment breaks. So people that should be standing together are broken apart because of really the actions of Scott Paterno, which will be a big part of episode 3, which is called The Paternos, where we analyze all of the actions taken by the Paterno family throughout this thing. But think about it. If you're the board of trustees of this huge institution, and over the period of 72 hours, your former coach has been accused of abusing kids, your president, athletic director, and most famous coach in college football are all accused of covering up his crimes and sweeping them under the rug. This is an absolute 10 on the Richter scale of PR nightmares for a university. And the only thing you know within that board of trustees is what is in the presentment and what was said by Linda Kelly at her press conference and what has come out in the media since then. There's nothing else that you have to go on. And to complicate matters worse, the guy who was the attorney general when the investigation was opened is now the governor And because Penn State is a public university, the governor sits on the Penn State Board of Trustees. So the guy who opened the investigation is now sitting in that boardroom with the other trustees trying to determine what decisions the university should make.
Hey, y'all, changing my wardrobe from summer to fall? Hey, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. Look, I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90, and it's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that dude out this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater and heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later.
Hey, y'all. One thing I've learned in 16 years of being with my wife is that PMS and menopause are a very real deal. Thank goodness for Hormone Harmony. Hey, do you experience cravings or bloating? Do you feel a little bit down or off? Do you struggle to find comfort in your body? Do you experience bad sleep quality? Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony supports hormonal balance and regulation. It relieves symptoms of menopause, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, promotes healthy weight loss and curbs carb cravings. It improves sleep quality, reduces occasional bloating and gas, and it relieves hot flashes and it relieves mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through premenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas, or no desire to be intimate with someone, if you know what I mean. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar, is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, my wife says, is feeling like herself again. And that's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use the code RLRC for 15% off today.
Given what they know or what they think they know, and the only information they have is what came out of the presentment. So that board of trustees thinks Jerry Sandusky was found anally raping a boy in a Penn State shower. and that the coach, the athletic director, and the president of the university all found out about it and did nothing. So believing that and being influenced by Corbett and also the guy who was the number two guy on the board at that point in time, who was the CEO of U.S. Steel, a huge corporation in Pittsburgh,
right.
John Surma, was somebody who had had many problems with Paterno over time. And you know, I'm going to make a little comparison that I think people that listen to this show will really get. Joe Paterno, yes, the winningest coach in college football history, but he had won his two championships in the early and mid 1980s. He hadn't won, won some bowl games and had some competitive teams and everything else, but it had been 30 years since Penn State was a major player on the national stage, and they had had some really bad losing seasons in the early 2000s. And so while Paterno was, nationally recognized and beloved locally, he was long past his prime. He was in his early 80s. He wasn't, it wasn't Joe Biden at the debate, but he was,
right.
He wasn't that far behind that. I mean, he would die a few months later. He didn't know he was walking around with cancer at the point that this thing explodes. He literally dies 2 months later. But you have this board that's about to coronate him the most winning coach ever. Your impression is that this guy is bulletproof, that no way the university would ever fire Joe Paterno. Well, John Ziegler and I have joked that if something like this happened at Alabama under Nick Saban as the coach at Alabama, it never would have gotten anywhere, because nothing would have ever gone public without investigations happening internally to find out if there was a shred of truth to it. And they would have stood behind their guy because he's still a great coach, bringing them championships, and he's still relatively in their prime. Paterno was, they were giving him the Lifetime Achievement Award, but they were ready to move on. And so Paterno was not nearly as safe as people perceived Paterno would have been. And when his son pulled this rogue act, yes, he was his father's lawyer, but he on his own went on the lawn and declared that a lot of kids have been hurt and that we should say a prayer for the kids. Well, to the public, that means that's Joe Paterno,
right,
saying this is all true. And with, yep, that's when the board said, okay, now we have our confirmation. Paterno saying it's true. We have the presentment. We have the reaction of the media. We have Scott Paterno saying it's true. We've got to fire these guys.
Right. And it was a perfect storm. And, people forget college football is a huge business. And so the board of administrators and all that, when they get dumbass like his son coming out and saying that, praying for the kids, the victims, however you said it, then they have to go into protect the university, mate. Right? We call it an acute political emergency, and they did what they did, and it just further compounded it on the two teams getting together and praying for the victims on national TV when there haven't been any more victims, first of all, or alleged victims brought forward, and the indictment, we now know, was bullshit, but we'll get into that. So I'm good with this week's episode. I think it was a well-told story. It was whatever you want to call it, panic, an ape, an acute political emergency, whatever it is. I don't think anybody had a specific intent to make it a conspiracy or work it even look like it's a conspiracy, but that's what it looks like. When you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, like this person did this, this person did this, this one didn't do that, you're like, it certainly looks like a conspiracy. I just think it's a whole shitty summer situation that came together, perfect storm, perfect time to unfortunately, again, for Joe Paterno more than anyone else at this point. Now, y'all.
Right. Well, and I think what I hear you saying is that you are pretty much at the point where Ziegler was in his investigation at this point, because at this point, he entered this, he began investigating it because the Paterno story didn't make any sense to him. And he assumed Sandusky was guilty as hell, but he wasn't worried about that. He wanted to understand, could this legendary coach who had graduated, 95% of his kids at a university that had never been up for any kind of penalty, that had lost a lot of recruits in recent years because he wouldn't bend the rules and wouldn't do a lot of things that a lot of other universities were doing. It's ironic because the folks like Surma that wanted to get Paterno out of there wanted to get him out because he was goody two shoes, still leading a team like he did in the 1960s and 70s, while this was the 2000s and, that didn't fly anymore. You couldn't compete playing by the rules that strictly. And so Ziegler enters this thing with the journalist's curiosity of, I have a perception of this man. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I'm not a fan of the university, but I think I understand who this guy is. And if a former coach, this isn't a guy who was his coach, this is a guy who in November of 2011 hasn't coached at Penn State for more than 10 years. So right. He is, this is a former coach. So is that guy that I think I, whose mentality I think I understand, capable of doing something like this? And all of his instincts were, no, I don't believe he is. Something's fishy. I need to dig in. And he gets to this point where McQueary is discredited, where an understanding forms of how these separate groups, like the board versus the prosecutors or the state, that you would think would be on opposite sides going against each other, are actually aligned in this, that, and purely accidental, like you said, nothing, right. Nothing coordinated. There was no maliciousness. But about the only place you can point a malicious finger is probably at Corbett, who ends up to become the least successful governor in Pennsylvania history, and a one-term guy who gets blown out when he goes for when he tries to get reelected. But he definitely had it in for Graham Spanier, and we'll find out all the history about that. And so I think Corbett was malicious. Corbett went into that board of trustees conference call. So they don't even do a formal meeting. They don't even hold a formal vote. They have a conference call with people dialing in from outside and whoever happened to be in state college because they were coming to the game that weekend or they live there, were there in person. But on that call, Corbett said, remember boy in the shower. Mm-hmm. That was his message. Remember the boy in the shower. And what they did was they didn't take a vote. They asked if anyone disagreed that they should speak up. And it wasn't even clear. We'll find out as we interview multiple board members through the podcast series, we'll find out that they didn't even really understand what Corbett and Surma were asking for. They didn't know that if they didn't speak up right at that moment, it meant meant Spanier and Paterno were being fired. They didn't understand. It wasn't a vote. It was a discussion. And then it was, does anybody disagree? And nobody spoke up. And then the next thing you know, Paterno is being fired, and being fired in such an unbelievably disrespectful way. I mean, sending a messenger with a burner phone with a message to call the number on the burner phone. And then he calls the number on the burner phone and gets fired. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. After 50 years. Right. So again, though, I think it was, I'm a storyteller, right? I think that that episode was very well told, but, and I'm going to go on the butt. I think the, you know, last week we had the discussion about the date and all that good stuff. And we're going to have, I understand this, you know, things about the governor and board members and all that. But at some point, y'all, we're going to get into the 40 counts of molestation that Jerry Sandusky is convicted of currently. And that's where it'll be investigator against you. At this time, I don't know any more than the average citizen as far as the counts and whatever. But I can tell you this, it's fucking hard to get 40 counts of molestation, conviction, and a jury trial against anybody if you don't have proof. So, we'll table it and we'll get there. And the, I'm enjoying it. It's interesting. And I'll get to listen to the third episode this week.
So look, like I said, at this point, Ziegler is pretty darn sure that there was no conspiracy. There was no cover up, that Paterno is the man that he thought Paterno was, and that the other leaders of the university are the people that they were purported to be, and that no cover-up theory makes any sense here, because if you were going to cover it up, McQueary would have to be part of the cover-up. He'd be the guy who you'd need to have his mouth shut. And
I agree that it's not a cover-up. I'll tell you why. I've seen it from the other side. The only motherfuckers that would cover up something like that are people who partake in it. Right. If you're a pedophile yourself and you're doing rapes and shit and you do it together. And I've had this with priests, that one priest went in to tell about him being offended against when he was a young priest or Jesuit, whatever it's called, studying. And the head guy that he went to tell it to raped him because him and the other guy that raped him did kids together. Right. So there was a cover up on between those people. Do I believe Joe Paterno ever knew that Sandusky was fucking kids? No. And no normal person that doesn't take part in the act would stand for that. Just you wouldn't. And they even fucking prisoners hate child molesters. Right. I mean, nobody. Then I don't know one person that would cover up for a child molester. Even parents and shit wouldn't cover up for a child molester unless they were involved. So,
right. There's one thing that comes up at the very end of the episode regarding Louis Free and something called the Free Report.
Free Report,
That I think can be a little bit confusing with the way that it comes in. There's a later episode in the series that is fully devoted to the Free Report. But the board realizes in the aftermath of this, in the days between the indictment and the Sandusky trial, which happens in June of 2012. So this, everything we're talked about today happened there that week in November of 2011. But by June of 2012, Sandusky is already on trial for murder. In the interim, for child sex abuse. I'm sorry. In the interim period, the board is being heavily criticized because more and more information is getting out locally. More and more trustees are upset about the way the quote unquote vote was handled, and they're being challenged. And so they decide they need to get validation. They need to get exoneration for the decisions that were made. And so they hire this outside investigative firm that is owned and run by former director of the FBI, Louis Free. Mm-hmm. And they basically, well, we'll know when we get to that episode, but
save it.
But that's where the mentions of Free come from. So they hire him, and his report comes out a month after the verdict. So his report comes known July of 2012, but his investigation is going on in that period between the indictment and the trial, just so you don't get confused on that, because that could be a little bit confusing.
Well, we'll look forward to continuing the next week. And so far we're in agreement, I think, on just about everything. And that's it. So clues of this version of Nittany Lions, Nittany Lion, L-Y-I-N-G.
Well, and I think it's you think about this in the present day, and you realize how easy it is for media narratives to penetrate the public consciousness and become just locked in, because there's just an assumption people of our age, our generation, make that the media, you know, knows things that we don't know, that they have access to information that we don't have, that they don't just out and out lie to us. And, you know, we've seen a great example in just the last few days that, the media does lie to us. And in this case, the media in the Penn State case, the media didn't intend to lie to us. They didn't know they were lying to us. They just went for the juiciest story, which was to go after Paterno's head, not Sandusky's head. Paterno's head was going to sell newspapers and get clicks and get viewers. He wanted to tell the juicy story that was being told. And so they had no one offering some kind of alternative narrative. So they just ran with the one that was laid in front of them and assumed that everything in the presentment was true.
Yep.
Crazy.
1,000% agree. So,
all right, anyway. Dude, feel all good. Right, enjoy the weekend and, folks have a great Monday. We will talk to you again on Friday.
All right. Peace.
Aglets.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.